This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Let me introduce Jean-Michel Rabaté for his presentation. I have a bio here. Jean-Michel Rabaté, a former student of Helene Sissou and of Jacques Derrida, Jean-Michel Rabaté is currently professor of English and comparative literature at the University of Pennsylvania since 1992. He has published about 10 books on Samuel Beckett, Thomas Bernard, Ezra Pound, James Joyce, and literary theory, among which are James Joyce's Authorized Reader and Joyce Upon the Void, The Genesis of Doubt. And some of his recent books include The Ghosts of Modernity, Writing the Image After Roland Barthes, a collection of essays he edited, and a recent collection of edited essays on Jacques Lacan in America.
Thank you very much. After such a glowing introduction, I think the only thing one can say is like Tristan Farah, je me très sympathique. My title was a parody of a gesture that Roland Barthes would often repeat, and he himself often signed his texts only R.B. So I called Osvaldo O.R. with the idea of referring to something that came to me very late, talking with Aaron close to midnight. When he asked me for a title, I gave O.R. Post Duchamp. And with the reduction of his signature to these initials, I had in mind this question that is an alternative. And I think we've just seen with all these wonderful slides what Osvaldo has done, that is a sort of survey of the universal history, not of infamy, but of art. And the recent developments that the term modernism, we started discussing it this morning, has brought about, you have generally alternatives and dilemmas. Like, for instance, you know that for Gertrude Stein, there was an or. You would be either on the side of Picasso or on the side of Matisse, Matisse being the soft and Picasso being the hard, the genius. I think that today, as we know, we choose our predecessors. So this is one of the lessons that Borges brought to us. And it seems that, and especially since we talked this morning as well about the Picasso quote in the opera, the question I had for Osvaldo was whether he had this or, like, Duchamp or Picasso. And it seemed to me that an obvious answer to that question, but maybe one should go beyond it, would be that he would indeed choose Duchamp as his predecessor. As we know, Duchamp, and this is something that has always interested me, had this moment in his career when, after having stayed in New York during the First World War, for no clear reason, he decided to go to Buenos Aires. And the stay in Buenos Aires is still today quite mysterious. It looks as if he spent his time playing chess, didn't like Buenos Aires, found it very provincial, but nevertheless thought of organizing exhibitions and so on until after a year later he left. At the same time, more or less, Borges was coming back from Europe, and I imagine that they may have crossed, the steamers may have crossed somewhere. We know that they met somehow, Borges and Duchamp, through the intermediary artist Jules Solar, but he writes it with an X, Jules Solar, who was a friend of both. And it's what leads me to one question, and I was recently reopening this relatively thick book, which is Borges' collected works translated into French, in the Pléiade edition. And in that collection, at least I read Borges more in French than in Spanish, there's a text from 1922 when Borges, coming back from Spain and Europe, is trying in a way to continue what he has seen there and do it better, that is the avant-garde movement, and launch what he calls ultraismo. And one of the texts he writes is a text saying the futility of the cult of the self, or of the cult of the ego. And the motto of this text is there is no ego, there is no self. This is at least a sentence I'd like to simply take out of its context and maybe ask Osvaldo later on, we can return to this, whether this is not something that his work is trying to convey, that there is no self. There are codes, and this would be perhaps what we could call the structuralist position, but the self is an illusion. At least, this is a question, it seems, that somehow Borges kept posing in various works. And as we know, he soon grew dissatisfied with avant-gardism and modernism as such. And we, Reynaldo this morning alluded to the famous Pierre Ménard text, which is clearly a critique of Joyce. Pierre Ménard is making fun at the end of people who recreate the Odyssey in La Canebière and so on. The other quote I want to make of this interesting Pléiade collection is the last text that Borges wrote before his death in 1987. It's the introduction to this volume, a preface, in which he says, I am the least historical writer. I am not historical. But then, to make his point clear, he quotes this, a thing of beauty, it's in English in the text is written in French, a thing of beauty is a Joyce forever, as wrote John Keyes and so on. I was surprised when I first saw it that the very serious Pléiade editors should have let this pass without even a footnote. And I asked some people at Gallimard who were extremely surprised nobody had noticed it. So it was a sort of posthumous joke by Borges with the French establishment to leave this little deliberate misprint at the expense of Joyce and modernism. I think this is something that we can perhaps see in the element of, let's say, transparency. We talked a little bit this morning about the transparency of the plastic, of the puppets. What's interesting, and I was thinking of this very prosaically around lunchtime while we were all eating from these transparent plates. Once or twice I thought people had left a sort of handout within their pasta. And I thought, wow, it's a little disgusting. Then I realized that it was just under the plate. This is just to say something very basic, that transparency always implies that you can see through and that you see what's behind. And clearly this is the case with the puppets, that they manage both to allegorize the absence of ego. On the one hand, they are transparent, they have no identity, they are interchangeable. They allegorize the Deleuzian idea of, as Chris Poggi was suggesting, the body without an organ. But because they are transparent, and this is a Joycean question, yeah, ineluctable modalities of vision, it's what the beginning of chapter 3.
The visible, sorry.
You're right. The ineffable modality of the visible, when Stephen is quoting Aristotle, is that there is color and there is transparency. and one goes with the other. So transparency is a way of seeing color behind. So what can we do with this, since even if the ego is lacking, what we see behind is this cultural background, in the same way as we know today in from contemporary physics that whenever we look at the sky, if we see what is black behind, is supposedly, and I'm never sure whether I'm supposed to believe this or not, is what remains from the Big Bang, somewhere behind in the past. Which leads me to this question of seeing color as a kind of memory. And I'd say that maybe in, among the predecessors that Osvaldo has chosen for himself, behind Duchamp, and maybe with the Picasso who was quoted there, there would be a Leonardo. A Leonardo who, as we know, and at least Freud made this into the main point in his analysis of Leonardo, in Ein Kindheit, Erinnerung, Leonardo, Leonardo somehow ruined his better works because of his fascination for knowledge. This epistemophilia of Leonardo stood in the way of creation. And I see this as Duchamp's main legacy today. After Duchamp, I'd say the question is not so much how to be creative, that is, how to be original in a sense. I think everybody can be creative, and we are all creative in our own ways. I think one shouldn't make a myth of creativity at all. But the question would be, how can one be critical and creative at the same time? That is, how can one keep a critical edge, and I mean critical in all the meanings there, that is, on the one hand, critical theory, literary criticism, cultural criticism, and of course, political criticism, maybe. How can one be critical and creative, that is, create something that will be, let's say, a questioning of things we take for granted. And this is where thinking of memory and the way memory, the cultural memory of myth, perhaps functions in Osvaldo's work, we're thinking of Freud and of Proust. We know that Freud had this discovery when he finally went to Athens. he was in Italy and then took with his brother and went to Athens, and he had dreamed of seeing the Parthenon so often that when he saw the real thing, he couldn't believe it was it. And then he had what he called a disturbance of memory, and he realized that he had doubted that the Parthenon would exist, and then that he had not doubted, but in the moment he thought he had doubted. This is what he calls the disturbance of memory. I leave this as perhaps something that Osvaldo's works aim at producing in us. Is this real? Did it really happen? What do we see when we see something? It's in a way parallel to the experience that is so often narrated in Proust. For instance, when Proust discovers the narrator, of course, of La Recherche, discovers the beautiful church in Balbec. As those of you who read Proust know, each time you have a cultural object that is in a way commented upon by the narrator, this object has been in a way made interesting and important by previous discourses, and in this case it is because of Swann's praise of that church as being more beautiful than Chartres and so on, more beautiful than Venice, then the narrator goes to Balbec. And what he sees is totally disappointing, and this is the experience you have in Proust all the time. He sees the reality of this church, he imagines something more Persian, it's just a banal Romanesque church. He thought the sea was close, the church was close to the sea, and it's in a sort of marketplace with people passing around, and he cannot distinguish in a way the object from the surroundings. So the magic that he expected doesn't work. That is, he cannot see the object, the church, as a structure, as a sort of ideal structure, because there are people who sell cigarettes and so on, and somehow he's totally disappointed. It's only later that he needs a kind of discourse to recapture the magic that was there. And this is something that you find in Proust constantly. These moments of disappointment, the same with Berna. The narrator goes to the theater, sees that Berna doesn't understand anything, is not at all entranced, and realizes that the people he admires love it, and then he loves it as well. It's a little what we have to do today in a certain fascination for works of art that we see in the context of the critical discourses that accompany them, like the color analysis that we see in some of early work of Osvaldo's, and this idea that in a way criticism and a creation can simply join, that there is no real difference, and this is something that I see as the outcome, not to slightly disagree with Greg Flaxman's talk today, although I loved it and admired it. I don't think there is so much an issue about exhaustion, but the issue would more be that of bridging the gap between a discourse that would be more or less scientific, let's say, more or less universal, and something that would be totally private without necessarily being underpinned by a subjectivity at work. This is, I think, what one sees at the end of Roland Barthes' life, when having, in a way, demonstrated that one can always analyze absolutely everything from contemporary myth to literary works, from film to images and so on, as a deployment of codes, he just gets bored with what he's discovered and realizes that what matters is what he calls the point or the punctum. And this punctum, I see, and we would have indeed to go back to some of these images, and I think every viewer has a slightly different notion of the punctum, but in my case, I say, I found my punctum this morning, and I'd already found it when viewing for the second or third time the video, and my punctum was in what Roland Barthes calls the grain of the words. And of course, it's with Edith Piaf. And it's just with Edith Piaf's R's. The way she rolls the R's, rien, rien de rien, this is my punctum, somehow. This is where Osvaldo touched me with this rolled R of Edith Piaf. And indeed, he managed to show with this, to me at least, that I can be touched even though I see the egoless characters on stage, and somehow my heart has been touched by it. Thank you very much.